Not Your Poppies podcast is a place where booze and humor are used to bring you the real raw stories of women throughout history.
It's feminism with a hint of tequila.
¿No es cafecito con tu abuela?
It's tequila shots with your best friend.
My name is Carmen.
And I'm Laura. And welcome to another episode.
ASMR, that's what it's called.
Is that what you're on right now?
Can you hear that?
No.
You can't hear me?
I see you pouring something, but I have no idea what you're pouring.
You didn't hear anything?
Nope.
Well, that was an impressive. I just poured in my michelada. My trailer trash michelada from the gas station.
You've been on a michelada binge. Isn't this your second, third episode doing that?
I think so. It's easy. You don't have to think about it. It's already pre-made for you. The less I can think lately, the better for me. Call it.
That's one way to put it. The less I could think, the better.
Yeah. That's my way of living life these days. What about you? What are you drinking?
I am drinking a wine that I brought from Mexico. I think, what was it, like last week or the week before? It's called Vinos Cuatro Soles Mexico, Vino Rosado, Blanc de Zinfandel. I can't say wine names, but for the wine drinkers out there, that's what it is.
Is it a red wine?
It's a pink wine.
Pink.
It has like this really pretty, what are they called? The dogs of the dead?
A cholo?
Eh?
A cholo?
No, hay un nombre específico que les ponen. Like the dog that guides you in the afterlife.
Un jerubín? No, un jerubín no. ¿Cómo se llaman?
No, no es cierto.
No, un jerubín isn't a demonic. It looks like a demon, but it's an angel. ¿Cómo se llama? Se llama... ¿Cómo se llama? I know this. Se llama... No me digas. When you find it, don't tell me because it's going to bother me. It is called un... Oh my God, it's going to bother me. It's like right in the tip of my tongue. It's not the dog. It's the animals. They're all...
Sí.
So they're
like
the
spiritual animals, like Mexican, you know, when we die, we all get a spiritual animal assigned to us in the afterlife.
Yeah. The dog is called a cholo because it's from Coco, but the type of dog is called a cholo, but no, the actual, there are a lot of fucking animals. What are they called? All right. Fuck it. Just tell me.
Alebrijes.
Alebrije.
It's an alebrije.
What do they call it? A jerubín?
Yeah, heroin. What is that? I've never heard of that.
They're a biblical angel. Like, they're like, well, when you see them in art, they're the angels that look like babies that every Mexican mother has in their house.
Okay. Yes, the cherubs. Cherubs.
Yeah. Heroin.
Oh, how cute. See, look, this is like a bilingual lesson for all of us. We learned the names of spiritual animals in Mexican afterlife.
Mm-hmm.
They're the ones that come and take us to our afterlife. We learned how to say cherub in Spanish, in English.
Yeah, like a history lesson, a really cool woke history lesson.
So far, this has been a great episode, honestly.
Alrighty. Should we just call it a day?
Yep.
Call it a day.
Good night, everybody.
Bye.
I'm pretty sure you could tell from the way I was blowing my nose earlier before we started recording that my allergies are still fucking me up so bad.
How are you feeling? So is there anything that makes you feel better? Like anything that you can do to aid?
So at this point, I have to take an allergy pill in the morning and at night, but they have to be different allergy pills because taking the same allergy pill doesn't really help much. So I alternate and do Zyrtec at night. And then I have another one that the allergy specialist gave me in the morning. The bad part of that is it helps, but I don't like to take them too often because it makes me feel like I'm swelling up, like I'm retaining all my water. And then I get super drowsy, like incredibly. Like
even the non-drowsy ones make you drowsy?
I've been sleeping 9 hours at night because I'll take it around 8, and by 9, 9:30, I have to go to sleep. And I've been sleeping around 9 hours a night. And today I still had to take a nap during the day because I was so tired, and not from like tired, like body tired, but like my mind was so foggy. It was so bad. And the worst part is as soon as my allergies start to calm down, it'll rain again. And then the rain, because of the way El Paso is, it'll just bring up all this like mess of like more allergies. And it's just, it's bad.
Jeez, I can't imagine. So like the drowsiness that you feel every day, like the fogginess, is what I literally have every day without the allergies. So I can't even blame it on anything. I just blame it on like straight up laziness. That's
but do you life. Have like brain fog? Because what happens to me is like right here in the like the front of my like my forehead, it like hurts and it feels foggy, like I can't think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I get like headaches. It got worse after COVID. Like I get like.
But you got COVID, huh?
I got COVID. Yeah.
That's crazy. Yeah. I never had COVID, and honestly, because I even like the littlest cold will knock me out. I was so scared of getting COVID. I was like, oh my God, this shit is going to take me out because my immune system is not built for this. I think that's why I'm so antisocial.
It's probably good because I feel like it would kick your ass. When I got it, the body aches suck. Like everything that everybody tells you, you have all those cold symptoms, you have all of that. Yes. But for me, it like lingered. It lingered a lot longer than I wanted it to. And it went into like, I was so congested that the congestion started like building up in my throat. And I had like this severe like throat infection. It almost felt like strep throat. And I wanted to tough it out. And it was when my stepmom passed away. And so I wanted to tough it out because there was like a lot of things going on. And I couldn't. I think the next day I had to go to urgent care. I just went. And they're like, yeah, you don't have strep. You don't even have an infection. It's just like literally your congestion just like sitting there that's causing you to hurt. But they gave me like these steroids and I got better afterwards, but it kicked my ass. And they had said I had already tested negative for COVID, but it was like, it was just like lingering symptoms. It was weird. So don't get COVID if you don't have to.
Yeah. Well, steroids are a very common form of helping people who have like really bad asthma that tags along with their allergies. I remember a couple of my soccer mates from high school had to get steroid shots. And then I had an allergist specialist recommend that for Alberto because he also has really bad allergies and he has asthma. So it kind of like when one is bad, the other one starts getting bad and vice versa. And I remembered, I was like, no, I just wasn't really. But so far his allergies, no, they've been pretty much as bad as mine, but he's a troop. He does much better than me. I think I'm a big baby.
Isn't it weird? Because like we feel that way, but honestly, like look at how much you have it on your plate. Like it's not, you're not a baby. You feel sick. You need a rest. You need to take a break. You need to be kinder on your body. You know, give yourself just moments to yourself, and you don't do that. You need to do that.
But I did do that because like, for example, today when I text you, I had already served myself my cup of wine and I went to go lay down on my bed and I was reading my book and I read for like an hour before we started recording. And, you know, Ariana went and grabbed her Harry Potter book. She was reading right next to me. And then Alberto just went down and laid down and fell asleep. So I do take time to relax. I think the biggest thing is, I've honestly, seriously been contemplating about getting somebody to come help me out with like the housekeeping, like a housekeeper, even just to come like maybe once a week, once every 2 weeks, just because even though I stay home, it's weird when you work from home, not only are you focused on what you're working, but you're also focused on the fact that you have dishes that haven't been washed, you have clothes that haven't been put in the laundry, or clothes that are in the washer that need to be put in the dryer. Mm-hmm. You need to sweep, you need to mop, you need to vacuum, you need to clean the bathrooms, you need to pick up everybody's clothes, and it does get exhausting.
And because you're home all day, right? Like mm-hmm. the last thing, it's not like a regular job where you like get home and you're like, okay, I have these extra, whatever, this extra hour where I can spend cleaning. It's so weird because you work from home. Like the last thing you want to do is A, continue working, and B, like do anything home-ish, right? You want to just relax or something, and that the house does get like, you know, ignored in some ways. Like there's this idea that because we work from home, oh, we have the time to put in a laundry basket. We have the time to go, you know, do the bathroom. Or in between breaks. Like, I don't want to fucking do Cinderella work in between breaks or during my lunchtime. No.
Yeah, because then at that point, you never get a break, because mm-mm. that's what I do. I have a break. So I'm like, okay, so while I wait for my coffee water to heat up, I'm going to go throw a load in the washer and I'm going to go take the trash outside. But then my whole break was gone with me working at my house. Mm-hmm. And I feel to what you're saying, when I was working in the office, I remember I would get home after picking up the kids, start making dinner, let them relax while I made dinner. We would eat dinner. They would do homework and I would start cleaning. And it was like my little hour of me cleaning and kind of de-stressing and blah, blah, blah. And my house was like every single night it was clean. And I never felt tired of it, but because there was that clear separation of work from home.
Because you actually enjoy those tasks when you're home, because you're home, right? You want to clean mm-hmm. home. You want to be, you know, you want to declutter your mind. It's almost soothing and relaxing. It's almost like self-care. But when you're home, now let me ask you this. Would you go back to the office if you were given the chance?
Not right now. I wouldn't.
I wouldn't either.
Me either. And let me tell you why. Because people have told me this, like, well, why don't you look for like an office job? Because I tell them, like, I don't really know anybody here in El Paso. So it's kind of just, I'm always at Fernando's house and bugging him. And it's really cool though, because like I've met Evie's family and they're pretty chill. They're all pretty cool. And I really like hanging out with them. But besides that, I don't really like, I wait for Carmen to come visit me or my sister or my cousin. And that's pretty much it. But I enjoy that if my kids are sick, I can go pick them up, bring them home, and they'll stay in bed or watch TV while I work. I enjoy that during the summer break, my kids stayed home all day with me. They woke up late. I was able to make them food on my breaks. You know what I mean? I enjoy it. It's like extra
you're not time that stressed. I spend with my kids. Yeah, you're not stressed that they're staying with either some stranger or somebody else. You know exactly where your kid is. And it's like,
for daycare.
Exactly, paying for daycare, which God knows is so expensive. There is like a lot of like positive, and for the same reasons, I don't see myself going back to an office and physically work with people, besides they exhaust me. But to your point earlier about getting somebody to help you at the house, I agree. I think it's something that I've been considering too as well. Just have somebody come and show up for once a month, you know, and you know, as often, probably once a month, really, because the rest is just upkeeping and I can do that, right? The daily stuff. But it's just once a month, somebody to come in and just clean the fucking house. And yes, that's all I want. That's my dream.
It is hard for me to lay down and rest and relax because I'm consistently thinking about something I need to clean.
I don't have those issues. I don't. I'm like, fuck it. It'll get done tomorrow. Why? Why do I stress out today what's going to get done tomorrow? Why do I stress out today what's going to get done this weekend? Right? Fucking work is hard. Life is hard. The kid is hard. The everyday life is hard. Why stress out? I have more things to stress out about. Right? How about fucking writing the fucking story for this podcast today? That stresses me out.
Hey, you were on Facebook posting and I'm like, Carmen, your story.
I'm like, shut up, because I'm going to block you. I was like, keep on fucking judging my time and I will fucking judge. I will block your ass right now.
I guess what it boils down to is we all have our own traumas. Mine is I can't rest. And Carmen says she rests too much.
and people just, you know, deal as they go, right? They just go as whatever they do. I can't tell you how many times I drive my fucking boss crazy for not updating my calendar. She goes crazy about it. I'm just like,
I'm not going to stress about what's going to happen in a month. Let me focus on today. I'm very about today. Girl, I don't know if I'm going to live tomorrow. Might as well just get today out of the way. Let's get today out of the way and let's work
on it. Live for today. If today was your last day on earth, what would you do? What would be that one thing you would do?
If I knew that, like, what, like the end of the world or something was coming and like a comet was about to hit?
No, like, let's just say you know today is your last day. The minute you go to sleep, you're just not waking up anymore. How would you spend that last day? What is that one thing you would do? Like that you would say, I can now go in peace.
I'm so boring. I'd probably just watch TV and eat and then just kind of get anxious about dying that I'd just be like, you know what, fuck it. Let me take a melatonin and just wait for me to die.
Carmen.
It's true. You asked me.
In that aspect, you are definitely more Aries than I am, which I have no idea how when I'm like in freaking Aries all around everywhere.
I'm not going to stay up until I know that my last hour to live is 5 a.m. I'm not going to stay up until 5 a.m. to wait till I die. Might as well just sleep that off.
I would. Sleeping.
I'll sleep it off. I'll take the melatonin at 9 and just go to bed and then that's it. Bye. Why does it have to be so dramatic?
Because like for me, I don't know why. Like, okay, maybe I'm just like weird in that way, but I'm like, okay, today was my last day, I would want to make sure that every person that I love knows I love them, right? Like take that time to like call or send a message to each person. I would want to go skydiving. I've always wanted to go skydiving, but I'm scared because I'm like, what if I die when I'm skydiving? So, you know, I don't know. It kind of goes against each other.
No, I think you're the Aries. I'm not.
Okay. Yeah. In that aspect. Yeah. Cause I'm the one that's like willing to go out all crazy. Although the only thing I don't think I could do is die drowned. Like I don't, like that's my biggest fear is to drown. I think I could die any other way except drowned.
If I can just die on my own terms, I think I'd be happy on my own terms. That would be
melatonin at 9 o'clock.
Hell yeah. And then just sleep it off until I die. Why not? Why does it have to be so dramatic or so? You're like
definitely rose from the Titanic. I can see that.
Nah, I don't know. If I find somebody that's kind of like me, I'm going to tell you. I'm going to try to find somebody that's like, fuck it, let's go. But I don't know. I'm just like not. If the people that I love don't know that I love them, then how the fuck did I live all my life? That's my question.
Ouch. I just got ouch.
That's what I'm saying. I'm just like saying, okay, like,
but no now one... I'm wonder, do the people that I love know that I love them?
Well, like, that's up to you to answer, but like,
if do you know that I love you?
I do know that you love me. You don't have to tell me that you love me. I already know that you love me.
So if I were, no, I'm going to traumatize you. I'm not even going to go there. Let's go to my story instead. How does that sound?
That sounds perfect. You're asking a lot. You're getting real emotional over allergies. Is this what the medication does?
You know, I think it's also with the fact that, do you see that?
You've been drinking.
Yeah, I have 1/4 of the bottle left. So it's probably that too. And the allergies, I don't think it helps. But today's story was actually requested by Fernando when we first started the podcast. He had asked me to cover this lady and I had been putting it off because I was like, what does Fernando know about feminists throughout history? But let me tell you, I was very, very pleasantly surprised.
That's cool.
So shout out to Fernando for his suggestion. This lady is, I want you to tell me at the end what you think about her.
Okay.
So today I will be covering Manuela Sainz. All right. Manuela was born on the 27th of December of 1797 in Quito, Ecuador. She was the illegitimate child of Maria Joaquina Aispuro from Ecuador and a married Spanish nobleman by the name of Simón Sáenz de Vergara y Yedra. Her mother was abandoned by her family as a result of the pregnancy, and her father, he took care of Manuela and he paid for Manuela to go to school at a convent, the convent of Santa Catalina, where she learned how to read and write. At the age of 17, she was forced to leave the convent because she was allegedly found to be having an affair with army officer Fausto de Illuar. So she got kicked out of the convent at 17. In 1817, at the age of 20, her father arranged for her to marry a wealthy English doctor, James Thorne, who was twice her age.
¿Qué dijo el papá? Hay que mejorar la raza.
Ándale, ándale. Yes. That is, you know, growing up, I always heard that, but it's not until recently that I understood how racist that is. For those of you who don't speak Spanish, it's basically this like Latino Hispanic saying of bettering the race.
Because we were built on a caste system, right? And they used to say, oh, you're half, I don't even know what the caste system, like the definitions of it, but I know it's
like 27 levels or some shit.
Yeah, there's like, it's a ridiculous amount of fucking levels, but it's like, you're trying to achieve pure blood somewhere along your line.
Proximity to whiteness.
Pure blood, proximity to whiteness. Thank you.
Yeah.
And it's all bullshit. And it's like, if you're black and you're white, then you're this. If you're indigenous and you're white, you're this. Yeah. And then it starts mixing.
Or if your great, great, great grandpa was black, but everybody else has been white, you're still this.
So you're still not white enough. So it's like
the one drop rule. Like as long as you have one drop of like indigenous or African blood in you, then you still can't achieve whiteness, which is pointless. But yes, to your point, her dad did believe in that. Because remember, he himself was Spanish. So he married her off to this English doctor, right? In 1819, the couple moved to Lima, Peru, where she lived as an aristocrat, and she would hold social gatherings in her home where she would invite guests, which included political leaders, military officers, and the guest, you know, after a little bit of wine, just like myself, would share military secrets about the ongoing revolution with her. I don't know any military secrets. So if you're expecting that from me, I'm very, very sorry. But you can expect a lot of weird theoretical, philosophical questions like we just had for like the last hour.
Military secrets only are validated if they happen to be about aliens. Anything else? I am not interested in knowing. Roswell, Area 51, only if they involve aliens will I listen. Anything else? I don't care if we have fucking bombs. I don't care if we're trying to attack Russia. What? Tell me where the aliens are at. Tell me about like the fucking fifth dimension. Or
they're in Roswell, Carmen. You live like 3 hours away from the aliens.
Literally. Okay, continue.
So they didn't share secrets about aliens, but they dared share secrets about the revolution, right? So Manuela, she starts becoming incredibly interested in the revolution. One of the things that kind of prompted and pushed her into like being a more active participant was after Simón Bolívar took part in the successful liberation of Nueva Granada. She became an active member in the conspiracy against the Viceroy of Peru. As part of the conspiracy, Manuela and her friend Rosa Campuzano and other women who were pro-independence attempted to recruit colonial troops from the Royalist Defense Arsenal in Lima, Peru. So they were trying to recruit these troops, right, that were like royalist to come over to their side. She would hold secret gatherings where she would pass information as a spy, and the conspiracy actually ended up being a success with much of the regiment. So they were able to get the majority of the soldiers over to their side, including Manuela's half-brother, who defected to the anti-Spanish army of José de San Martín. In 1821, after proclaiming Peru's independence, José de San Martín awarded Manuela with the highest distinction in Peru, which was the title of Caballeresa del Sol, or Dame of the Sun. In 1822, Sainz left her husband. She's like, fuck this. I'm going to make my own destiny. And went back to Quito. When she was in Quito, she met Simón Bolívar. So she actually met him in person at a ball. And the two of them began a relationship of shared knowledge, right? Like these both were like super pro-independence people. And they quickly became romantic. They would send each other love letters, and she visited him while he moved from one country to another because he kept on getting exiled. So she would just like go and visit him wherever he was at right now, right? And Bolívar referred to Manuela as La Amable Loca. She continued to support the revolutionary cause by gathering information, distributing leaflets, and protesting for women's rights. She became one of the most prominent female figures of the wars for independence. She would wear a colonel's uniform with her two black servants, Jonathan and Nathan, who accompanied her everywhere. And they would also wear soldier uniforms. So she's like, you know, we're all soldiers here. She didn't feel contained by gendered conventions of what was considered proper feminine behavior. She smoked, she dressed up in men's clothes, and she was trained for military action. And I think this is one of my most favorite descriptions of any person I've ever covered. She was often described as an eccentric woman, a lesbian, who would dress up during the day as an official, and during the night, she went through a metamorphosis with the help of some wine.
I love that. With the help of some wine.
With the help of some wine. That's what I'm going through right now with all my...
You'll be turning your metamorphosis. You're going to kick in into a lesbian.
This morning, this day, I was a lesbian who dressed up like a man. And right now I'm going through metamorphosis with this wine. So yes, that's what she was described as. And if somebody ever described me that way, I would die a happy woman.
I'm going to put that in your tombstone when you die. I would just be like...
Exactly that. You have to say an eccentric woman, a lesbian who would dress up during the day as an official, and during the night she went through a metamorphosis with the help of some wine. Did you write that down?
Start off with a loving daughter, mother of two, and then we can go into the...
There you go.
Yeah, everything.
Exactly. Between 1825 and 1826, she lived with Bolivar near Lima, Peru, before Bolivar had to escape in September of 1826. So I'm telling you, this guy just kept getting exiled from everywhere. Manuela, she actually ended up remaining behind in Lima, Peru, and she was trusted by Bolivar to look after his affairs. On January 25th of 1827, the Colombian Army's 3rd Division in Lima, Peru, began arresting senior officers and seizing key locations in the city. They were demanding better food and pay, as General Santa Cruz and the anti-Bolivarian conspirators suspended the Bolivarian constitution. Manuela, who was a key member of the pro-Bolivarian force, went to the soldiers in full uniform and begged them to remain loyal to Bolivar. They dismissed her, so she began bribing sergeants and corporals in the hopes of outbidding the conspirators. She was eventually captured by the new Peruvian government on February 7th, 1827, and was imprisoned in a convent. So, full circle, she's back at a convent. She protested her treatment under both Bolivarian laws and new Peruvian laws. She was eventually released from prison in March and forced into exile in April. After being exiled, she went to Bogota, Colombia to meet with Bolivar. Because of her actions, she became known as the Libertadora. On the 25th of September of 1828, Manuela and Bolivar were awoken by what seemed to be a fight outside their home. Bolivar wanted to go investigate what was going on, and Manuela ended up convincing him to go out a window instead and leave the property. She's like, hey, you know, pretty much everywhere we go, you're a wanted man. Go out the window. I'm going to make some time for you. So Manuela ends up going to investigate what's going on. And she's met outside by intruders who had actually been sent to assassinate Bolivar. She told them that Bolivar was in one of the rooms, and then she proceeds them to lead literally from room to room to room, even stopping and like helping wounded guards along the way, because these guys had been in a fight, right? So she stops and she's tending to her guards and she's like, oh, no, hold on. He's not in this room. He's in that room. And eventually the men who had gone to assassinate Bolivar, they got tired of her shit. So they ended up beating her, like just beating her. But she lived, okay? So she did survive. She did live. Bolivar was able to live due to her quick thinking. And from then on, he would call her La Libertadora del Libertador.
Badass.
Yeah. Like she was a ride or die for her man. She's a very eccentric lesbian, if I've ever known one. Unfortunately, Bolivar died in 1830 from tuberculosis in Santa Marta, Colombia. Bolivar had actually ended up being exiled from Colombia, and he was on his way out of the country when he fell ill and promptly passed away. On his deathbed, Bolivar requested that General Daniel F. O'Leary burn all of his notes, letters, and speeches. Instead, O'Leary kept all the information safe, and it later played a key part in providing historians an in-depth view of Bolivar's personal life and his long-standing love affair with Manuela Sainz. In 1835, she attempted to return to Ecuador, and she was denied entrance and her passport was revoked by Ecuadorian President Vicente Rocafuerte. Rocafuerte stated on his decision to exile Manuela, "It is the women who promote the spirit of anarchy in these countries." It's always the women.
There's nothing scarier than a woman who fucking stands up and speaks out. Like, there's nothing scarier to a fucking man than that. Yeah, a woman exactly. That talks back.
Especially to Ecuadorian President Vicente Rocafuerte. She ended up taking refuge in Paita, Peru. And there she sold tobacco and she would translate letters for North American whale hunters who would write to their lovers in Latin America to make money. So you had these North American whale hunters go to Peru, fall in love with a Peruvian lady, and she would help write love letters to their queridas, which I think is a pretty badass way of making money. Like, you get to know the in-depth gossip of somebody's like little
it's like what I would do. Well, I wouldn't write love letters, but I remember.
No, you're not writing them, you're translating them.
You're translating them. Okay, so it's kind of like what I used to do. I used to make profiles for my single friends on Tinder and like Bumble and stuff, and that was like what I love to do. I still do it to this day. I'm like, oh, are you trying to date? Okay, right, let's get you on Bumble. But I have to write your fucking biography. Like, I have to write, I don't know, I make people sound real fucking good. And that's how I do. So I got
it. I remember you did that for me. And I think I had that Bumble profile active for 3 days by the time I got tired. And I was like, I'm not doing this. It's easier for me to meet people. That's weird, right? I'm very social in person, but via computer, I'm just like, whoa, why are you messaging me? Stranger, I don't know you.
That's the only way I can do it. I am not likable in person because I look like a bitch. I talk like a bitch. I act like a bitch. On Bumble, I used to be like, oh, people would be like, oh, you're so interesting and you're so cute and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, just wait till you hear my potty mouth and just wait until I talk about my raging feminism views. But poor Brandon is still trying to fucking like love me for those things.
But that's how you wrote me in. Although I forced my way into your life, that's how you made me stay. Let me tell you this. I am very quick to pick up my bags and get going because I love making people fall in love with me and then just going out the door and on my next adventure. But one of the things that made me keep coming back to you is the way that you challenge me. And I appreciate that. I've always appreciated that about our friendship. It's always a give and take. It's not just give or take. It's yeah. Like, you just challenge me to like think outside my comfort zone. And
so to your
that.
Question earlier about like what I feel
being
like
being a eccentric lesbian.
You no, before that. Before that, you eccentric lesbian. Before that, you said like, do what I ever wonder if you loved me, if you were to die, like you're taking time to tell people that you love them. I wouldn't fucking wonder. Not one fucking ounce of me would wonder if you ever loved me. Like, our entire friendship has been around you proving how much you love me without asking you to prove shit, right? Like, why would I ever wonder if you died unexpectedly? I don't need that text message. Save that text message for somebody else that might need that, but I don't need it. I don't need it. I don't want it because your existence proves to me how much you fucking love me. Continue with your story.
I don't even know if I can. I want to start crying now.
Ah, don't be a little bitch. Go fucking
I am a little bitch. Okay, so she is translating the love letters, right, to make money. And she establishes the Society of Patriotic Ladies, and she continues to partake in conspiracies against Spanish rule. And she remains politically active until about the mid-1840s. Now, Manuela ends up going through this deception where she feels like she's doing a lot for these countries. And I think we all go through this where you feel like you're doing a lot and then you're not seeing the results you want. So you kind of get just, you know, it kind of kills your spirit. And I think that's what happened to her. But on top of that, a ella no le llovió, le cayó un pinche huracán. So for those of you who don't talk Spanish, there's a saying that in Spanish, when you're going through like a bad time in your life, like no llueve llovizna, which is like it doesn't rain, it pours. And basically what I'm saying is it didn't just rain for her, like a whole fucking hurricane came into her life. In 1847, her husband was murdered in Patavilca, Peru, and she was denied her 8,000 pesos inheritance. After the stairs in her home collapsed, she became disabled. Manuela died in Paita, Peru on the 23rd of November of 1856 during a diphtheria epidemic. Her body was buried in a communal mass grave along with her belongings. Thankfully, I feel like she kind of foresaw this coming because she actually ended up sending Oleri. So the same Oleri who Bolivar had like told him like burn all my shit. She ended up sending Oleri all of her own love letters from Bolivar. On the 5th of July of 2010, Manuela Sainz was given a full state burial at the National Pantheon of Venezuela. Because she had been buried in a mass grave, no official remains of her existed for the state burial. So instead, there was symbolic remains composed of some soil from the mass, and they were transported through Peru, Ecuador, and Colombia before arriving in Venezuela. Because those are the four countries where she just went in and made a huge impact. And I'm going to leave you with this. During her time in exile, she developed a conversation of how friendship can empower women. She used this to justify the influence of women in politics. It opposed the exclusion of women from politics by connecting friendship with female companionship. This encouraged seeing women as friends rather than wives and mothers. It also went against the belief of Republican motherhood, which was popular at that time. This notion of Republican motherhood focused on the idea that women were better as wives and mothers rather than as companions and collaborators. The praise of Republican motherhood showed that there was fear with the idea that women could influence and undermine the state if they were left on their own. Through friendship, women would be seen as friends and peers to men, as companions and collaborators to the cause. Manuela believed that friendship would create stability and consistency. She encouraged friendship amongst women. She did not protest women's exclusion from politics. Instead, she used it as an affirmation of the reliability and trustworthiness of women. Therefore, friendship became a tool for independent women, which gave them a degree of influence greater than they previously had. Manuela helped put aside the view of motherhood as a woman problem and encouraged women to demand respect from politicians and intellectuals as individuals and not just as icons of their sex. And that is the story of Manuela Sainz.
Good job. Good job, Fernando, also for recommending the story. Who knew he knew? Who knew he knew?
Who knew he knew such a badass feminist? We're always fighting about this. That's like one of our biggest fights. Like, da-da-da-da-da, it is bien machista.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, even my cousin, who I've known since I was 5 months old, that's when his mom moved him from Mexico to the U.S.
Yeah.
And we, like, literally, I think the most we've been apart from each other is maybe a year.
Mm-hmm.
Consistently talking. Even I didn't know that. I was like, what? You knew
this
story?
He's awesome. You talk about him being a machista. I think he's more traditional than a machista. I think he just has like that traditional, he looks up to that traditional male, right? That traditional Mexican figure of a man. But I don't think he's a full-blown machista. My God, he has his little girl, just his little girl, and the way she fucking trolls him around her finger. Like,
yes. Yep. And you should see with Fernanda the other day. Edith had just given her a bath. So, you know, she was crying. She was like kind of going through this trauma of like, you know, having to get clean. And I was holding her. And so out comes Fernanda with his guitar and just starts playing his guitar. Fell asleep, like deep sleep, minutes. And the minute he stops playing, she wakes up. Like, what happened to the, and so he starts playing again. And we keep at it for like maybe like 10, 15 minutes. She was asleep. And I was like, daddy's girl. Daddy's girl.
He's so sweet. Good job, Fernando. Good job, Laura. Good job, Fernanda, too.
Yes.
Keeping and, your,
you know, cheers to Manuela. Because her life was full of so much adventure and she saw no limits. She followed her love wherever her loved her heart took her. She stood true to her ideas, even though, I mean, she had to move from country to country because, you know, she was radical. She was a radical feminist. So obviously she was an eccentric lesbian because obviously, you know, the two go hand in hand. And she believed that friendship was the tool to empower women.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful. Good job. Cheers to Manuela.
Cheers.
Salud.
I'm almost out of my wine. I'm not going to lie. I'm pretty. No, I'm not tipsy. I'm kind of tipsy. I'm okay.
Feeling good.
Yeah. How's your story? How are you feeling? Are you doing
great? No, I still got some. But I'm going to keep it light this time because I feel like I've gotten super dark. The last story, I think I'm still recovering from. So I'm going to keep it real light this time.
So I like it. This is going to be like a positive episode. I'm thinking, I'm feeling. Is that the vibe?
Yeah. Terts. Totally. Totes my goats. I think it's going to be one on our lighter sides for sure. But because I like the drama. We're gonna make it a little bit fun. So today's story is on Mary Vincent. Have you ever heard about her?
No. Wait, is this the Frankenstein author? No, it's not. Let's make it Mary Frankenstein. Sorry.
No. That was a guy dude, right? The Frankenstein dude?
No, the author? It was a girl.
Was it it was a woman.
Yes. Carmen.
I'm thinking about Frankenstein, maybe you should cover her next time. That'd be dope.
I should. I don't know her story, but
she was intense and she was awesome. She would fucking drink with the fucking men. And she was like,
she was morbid, obviously, by her stories and her books.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Forget her name, but Mary Vincent is the person I'll be covering today. So Mary was born in 1963 in Las Vegas, Nevada. Her parents worked in the casino, right? She kind of fucking just grew up and kind of like that lifestyle and stuff. Mommy and daddy decided to get a divorce because shit doesn't work out all the time. And this caused Mary to be a little bit depressed. You know, she's 15 years old at this time. Her parents are getting a divorce. The world's coming down. It's hard to understand, especially when you're in the 60s, 70s at this time, right? So doesn't make sense. She starts to kind of like rebel. Before this, Mary was just like any typical girl, right? Beautiful. She was athletic. She loved to dance, to create art. But when the divorce started happening, she's like, you know what? Fuck it. I'm leaving. So she runs away. And she runs away to her grandparents' house. There's something about your grandparents when you're going through something hard and something about your grandparents, they just get it, right? It just seems comforting. But she's out there and she starts kind of like living a more hippie-ish lifestyle, especially in the 70s. And one day she's like, I need to go back home. Like, I am homesick. Like, I need to go back to my room, to my things. Like, I need to go back to where I'm from. So after living out in the streets, she's like with a group of a bunch of hippie kids who are hitchhikers. Let me ask you, have you ever hitchhiked in your life?
No.
You've never hitchhiked?
Oh, God, no.
Oh, you never did? Oh,
no. Fuck. Wait, you've hitchhiked?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Carmen.
I did. I was.
You have definitely lived a more hippie life than I have.
Oh, my God. I was
raised very conservative, I'm not gonna lie.
So was I. Then I think that's why I was.
But you got to hitchhike. Like, I never in 1,000 years.
I wanted to ditch Algebra 2 because I don't know. I hated the fucking teacher. And so I ditched his class, and me and my girlfriend, we went out to visit another friend who was pregnant or whatever. We were 14, 15 at the time. And we're trying to come back to school because I need to take the bus, because if I don't take I had already been in trouble for I don't know what. And I just needed to take the bus to get back home, because if my mom saw me like being dropped off by a friend, my ass would be fucking beat. So our ride canceled on us. That was supposed to pick us up over there. This was in close to a prison. And so she lives like literally very like across the street from the prison. So I'm trying to get this ride. They cancel on us. I'm telling my girlfriend, like, I'm bouncing, bro. Like, I don't know. Like, you can stay. I need to go, and no one's picking me up. And so I need to find a fucking ride. I need to walk back to school. I'm sorry. And my friend's like, you are not hitchhiking alone. I was like, all right, then fucking come with me. So we're hitchhiking. So we, I didn't know this until after the fact. Apparently there's a sign, because we're trying to hitchhike. Like, we're putting our finger out. We're doing the whole thing, whatever we see in the fucking movies. And
you're not supposed to pick up people by prisons.
I didn't know that until after the fact, because all these cars are passing us by. And then eventually a car stops. And they pick us up, and we just get in because we're happy to get a ride, because I know she needs to get back to school too. Like, she would get just as much in trouble as I would. So we get into the car and we're good. And then it's a couple, and we're like, okay, cool. It's a man and a woman. It's fine. And then they start talking in whatever fucking language. It's probably Russian or whatever it is. And then I look at her and she looks at me, and it was that one moment of like, holy fuck, are we going to be kidnapped and our organs going to be taken out and we're in front of the prison? Like, we are like the perfect people. We are the perfect kids to like sex traffic and like have somebody remove our organs. And me and her are just like fucking, like just freaking the entire, and it's like a 30 minute ride. It was awful. And we learned our lesson after the fact. So hitchhiking is a thing, and it happened. And I will
live that experience vicariously through you, because after all this true crime, there is no way in hell you will ever catch me hitchhiking. Red flag number one, you were hitchhiking near a prison. Red flag number two.
Yeah.
You sounds... had a person who knew they weren't supposed to pick you up in that area, picked you up. I'm so happy you're still alive and around to tell us the story of Mary Vincent.
Listen, if I would tell you all the fuckery I've done in my early teens, I wonder sometimes how I'm still alive, but that's one of, anyway. Yeah, so it sounds ridiculous. It didn't seem at the time. I just needed to go. I was more afraid of getting my ass whooped by my mom than fucking getting my organs removed, apparently.
I was a sex trafficked mother.
Yeah, exactly. So Mary Vincent, right? So she's feeling the same way. She's like, I need to get back home. I need to hitchhike regardless. I need to find a ride. She's currently in California. She needs to get back in Las Vegas, right? So she's with a group of hippies, and this fucking old man in a minivan stops by. And he asks the kids, like, hey, who needs a ride? And they're like, hey, you know, we do. And he's like, we'll only have room for one fucking person. So I'm going to Reno. And where are you guys going? And Mary's like, shit, I'm going to Las Vegas. Can you drop me off? He's like, hey, it's a little bit out of my way, but he's like, fuck it, I can like detour. And she's like, awesome. And the boy grabs her that's in the group. He's like, hey, red flags. Like, what do you mean he can only make a ride for one person and then be like, you're a girl? Like, I wouldn't do this if I was you. And she's just like, No, it's fine. It's fine. Like, motherfucker looks like my grandpa. Like, he's fine. He seems kind. He's cool. He seems like good people. So she gets in the fucking van. Don't get in the fucking van.
Mary, no. Mary. No, I know. Oh, God.
So sure enough, she gets in the van and he starts driving. She starts drifting off, right? He starts acting a little bit weird. Like, he sneezes during this car ride. He sneezes and then he gets himself back up. And then he like reaches over to feel her neck and like caresses and does like the creepy neck thing.
I was going to say, if sneezing is the weird thing, I've been acting weird this whole episode, but thank you for bringing out the caressing of the neck.
And does a caressing of the neck. And she's just like, this feels uncomfortable, but okay. So Mary's like, no, he's an old grandpa. He's my grandpa. Like, we're good. Like, I'm in my head. So she soon drifts away and she goes to sleep, right? Nothing major happens. At some point, she feels so safe that she even like offers, like, he stops at a laundromat real quick just to like, you know, clean some stuff. And she's like, I'll help you. Like, you know, cause he's an old man. And he's like, no, you're good. Just go back to sleep. Whatever. Cool. She goes back to sleep and they're back on the road. And when she wakes up, she notices that the exit towards Nevada has been missed. And Mary's like, what? Like, no, we're not going towards, like, I thought we were going, what's happening? So she points at this old man and she starts saying, no, we need like no to turn around because like my parents live over here. We're doing over there. And homie was just like, all right. No, I missed the exit. I'm sorry. I'm old. Like, I made a mistake. And he seemed remorseful enough where she's just like, okay, so are we going to turn or not? He's like, yeah, I need to use a restroom at this gas station. And she's like, okay. So mind you, she had just woken up, right? So because she already felt kind of weird about the situation, she's like, okay, so while he's in the bathroom, I don't know, he seems honest. What if he is a fucking psycho? So this is like this, her one moment to like leave the fucking van and run out, right? So she's about to like move out of the van, but then she notices that her shoes are tied together. And she's like, what? Like, when did this happen? So she reaches down to like untie her shoes and she gets hit in the back of her head with a fucking sledgehammer.
No, Mary.
Passes the fuck out, blacks out completely. And oh my God. Yeah, when she wakes up, she's being sexually assaulted in this dude's van.
How the fuck is this you keeping it late?
I know. I'm sorry.
Oh my God, Mary. Oh, Mary.
I know.
Carmen, you do this to me every week.
I know, dude. It's crazy.
At this point, it's a trauma of mine that I need to resolve with my therapist. Why?
I need to talk to her therapy. Why I'm so dark. So she's being raped, right? Off and on and off and on. It's getting towards the end of the night and all she does is she tries to scream and she tries to ask for help. Nobody is hearing. She's in the middle of nowhere. She doesn't even know where the fuck she's at. He would even like, he'd get so tired of her screams and everything that he'd like cover her mouth and say, if you fucking yell one more time, I swear to God, I will fucking kill you. Like, if you want to stay alive, just do as you're fucking told. To ease her pain, he would give her some alcohol to keep her kind of, you know, going or whatever. And that was off and on. So for the entire fucking night, she was just repeatedly assaulted time after time. When the morning comes, so after that, she's like tied up, right? So she's tied up and then it's the morning. He gets out of the van and she drags herself outside. Remember, she is tied up and she asks him, please just let me go. Like, I won't tell anyone. Just fucking please let me go. Like, I just want to see my mom and my dad. I promise you, none of this ever happened. And he gets so irritated with her. And he's just like, you want to fucking be set free? You want to fucking go? Okay, I'm going to set you free. So this motherfucker goes into his fucking toolbox, pulls a fucking hatchet, and swings at her left arm. Mary is like, so it's like that moment, like, did this just fucking happen? He strikes at it, he grabs a hatchet, an axe, and he fucking swings it at her fucking arm, at one of her arms.
Does it come off?
So it's still like hanging.
Oh my God.
And she's she's in the moment where it's like, did this just happen? And he like takes it out and he swings again. And so the last thing she remembers, like right before this moment, she remembers her grabbing him with her arm, and he swings again, but she's falling. Like she's like, if I just held on him, why am I falling? And she falls and she notices her arm, and she's missing her entire fucking arm. And her other arm, it's like kind of like that phantom thing where she still feels like she's holding on to this motherfucker. Yeah, she has a phantom feeling.
Oh my God.
She still feels like she's holding on to this motherfucker, but her arm is not attached to her anymore. And it truly is still attached to him. Like her arm is still holding on to this motherfucker.
Yeah, it's like your brain can process, like, because your brain has always known it's there.
She freaks out when she just sees all this fucking blood running out of her hand. And she's just like, so he chops off where the elbow is. And that's where he slices off. And she freaks the fuck out, obviously, right? With all fucking right. And he starts fucking like kicking her and telling her like all these terrible things. She starts screaming. She kicks. She yells. She asks for help. And nobody's hearing. He grabs the fucking axe again. The axe. And goes towards her other hand. And because she's fighting and screaming, that hand is harder to take off. So she's left. He has fucking chopped off both of her fucking hands by the elbow.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Don't hitchhike, guys. Please don't hitchhike. Especially with old men.
Doesn't matter if they look like fucking Santa Claus. Don't trust. So she starts bleeding to death, right? She's like bleeding and this guy. And so she just lays on the ground. She's bleeding. I think it's at a point where your trauma and your shock is just like so unbelievably like non-existent. Like I cannot imagine myself in that situation. So she's just there. I'm laying on the ground. And because she's bleeding so much, he starts to assume like she's going to just bleed out, right? She's probably good as dead or whatever. Starts dragging her, pulling her by her clothes, and throws her off to down the hill. It's a 30-foot hill, and just fucking throws her off, thinking that she's just good as dead, or if she's not dead yet, she's gonna be dead. And she plays dead herself. She doesn't scream. She doesn't talk. She doesn't say anything. She rolls down the fucking hill till she hits the ground. She knows right now. She's like, gang, she's in between that consciousness and not. She's in this moment of like, I'm gonna fucking die. Like, this is it. Like, I'm dead. Like, this is how I die. But a little voice was whispering inside of her, you need to get fucking help right now, Mary. You need to do something. You need to fucking stay alive. Stay alive. So what she does, she has this brilliant motherfucking idea of grabbing fucking mud. And she puts her arms in the fucking, in just like mud. And she like dips it to stop the bleeding from continuing and to kind of patch up. And
coagulate the blood.
Exactly. So she does that. And she starts paying attention to everything around her. She knows, okay, I need to find help because this motherfucker is going to continue doing this to other girls or to somebody else. He's not, he thinks I'm dead, but I need to make sure that I stop him. So that's like the one fucking thing that kept her alive. Remember, she's only 15 years old. So she hears the traffic. She hears like city sounds and she's like, okay, I need to get to the middle of the street. I need to get somewhere. It's light. It's pitch black. The only light there is, there's the moon and there's the stars. And that's what she was guiding herself on. So she continues, she walks and she starts hearing like a car pass by. She's like, I need to get the next car. But imagine her, what she looks like. She's sweaty. She's bloody.
Oh,
full of mud. She's missing two fucking arms. So the next car that comes by and she sees the light, she tries to do all the signs possible. But do you think they stopped to help her?
No, I'd be scared shitless if I saw that.
They didn't. And I think anybody would, right? And she was like, she was devastated. She's like, oh my God, like I'm done. Like I'm gonna die right now. And she's like sitting in the middle of the street and she sees another light of cars. So she's like, fuck it. Let me try it one more time. And she does. And it's a couple driving the car and they immediately stop. They get her in the fucking car. They keep her alive. They're talking to her and they get a hold of paramedics and they call people for help and they're able to transport her. The helicopter is able to come down and transport her to the hospital, nearby hospital, where they found out that she was missing half of her blood and somehow she still survived. She even got an infection, but somehow her body was so fucking resilient that she was able to survive that whole ordeal. She wanted to stay alive because she wanted to fucking call out who this motherfucker was because she remembered him to a T. 10 days later, they find him and they put him in jail. And the next time she sees him, it's to testify against court the fucking brutal shit he did to her. And she gave all the fucking details about the abuse and the attack on her. And when she finished giving, when she finishes giving her testimony, the man looks at her and he tells her, I promise you, if it's the last motherfucking thing that I do, I will finish what I started. The guy was found guilty. I guess I can say his name. His name was Lawrence Lipton. Lipleton, whatever. It doesn't matter. He was found guilty. They found that old fucker guilty for the rape and the attack onto Mary Vincent. He was sentenced to how many years do you think he was sentenced?
This was the 70s. So I don't know, like 15, 16 years?
14 years of prison.
Okay.
14 years of prison, which he only did 8.
Of course, because he was probably a good prisoner.
That's exactly what it was.
Oh my God. Oh my God. And you were fucking hitchhiking by a prison. Jesus
Christ. I didn't know this. Okay. I was only
14 at the time. So, because of what he did, it almost seems like this was not his first time. Like he knew to separate somebody away from the group. He knew almost distinctively Reno, Nevada. There's certain areas that might be around there. So one of these motherfuckers is going to say, I need to get to blah, blah, blah. It's like he knew.
Funny enough, the homie had already been convicted of contributing to the delinquency of a minor and had a history of alcohol abuse. He had recently been into a divorce from his second wife and was estranged from his daughter, but nothing to this matter. Not that we know, though. Not that we know, right? He probably has killed multiple people before this. Or
unresolved murders, unresolved missing
cold cases and stuff. They should definitely look into this motherfucker, right? But it just did not. Yeah, I think to your point, it doesn't seem like it was his first rodeo. For sure. Doesn't seem it at all. Now, it's very tragic because, well, it's also really stupid because he gets out of jail, right? He files a suit against Mary saying that she initiated the abuse, that she hit him. And so it was a self-defense, but none of that ever went into court. None of that was even considered. Everybody was just like, shut the fuck up, bro. Like, we're not even going to like entertain your case. You're stupid. So, his suit never went anywhere, but after his release from prison, Mary goes, like, even though like he goes to prison or whatever and he gets out, obviously there's still trauma, right? Obviously there's just like, how can you ever sleep at night knowing what had happened to you, right? All your dreams of being an artist, of being a dancer, like just none of that is ever going to be a reality because of that torment and that abuse. She lives a very depressed life, she's a recluse. She tries moving to different cities, but it just seemed like everywhere she moved to, people would know who she was because she was missing her two arms. So she never lived like a normal life, quote unquote, until she became a mom. and becoming a mom was like her biggest dream in life. And she was able to have her two boys, and her two boys are the reason she kept on pushing and pushing and pushing in life. Regardless of her marriage, regardless of her divorce, her boys are the two things that kept her grounded and living. Now, the fuckface, he moves back to Florida. In 1990, he was arrested again for petty theft.
When you say back to Florida...
I'm sorry, he was from Florida. The guy was from Florida.
So we're talking about a Florida man.
Because...
Oh my God, if you had started off... Oh no.
It would all make sense.
Yeah, Florida man.
A Florida man. Commits
a psychotic fucking shit. And you're like, oh yeah, that makes sense. This is from Florida. Business as usual.
That's his home state. Yeah.
Jesus.
In 1990, he was arrested for a petty theft. He was sentenced to 2 years, but only served, obviously, a fraction of time. So he goes back into the streets on February 19th of 1997. 20 years almost after the attack on Mary, this idiot lures a young sex worker named Roxanne Haynes to his home, where he attacked her, raped her, beat her, abused her. She was screaming so hard that the neighbors called the police around there. When the police arrived, they found Singleton covered in blood with Haynes' dead body lying on the floor. Singleton had stabbed the mother of three in the torso multiple times, resulting in her death. When it came to the conviction and to the trial, Mary goes there and stands one more time against her abuser to sit and testify and remind the court of all that this motherfucker had attacked, did attack, and will attack again. And if it wasn't for her statement once again in court, I don't know if this motherfucker would have gotten out alive. So he was sentenced to death in 1997. However, because on December 28th, 2001, at the age of 74, he died from cancer while being on death row. Of course. Now, Mary has became an artist. And she is an advocate for victims, and she continues to be a mother. She, on the interview that I saw, Mary was like, I needed to understand why somebody would be so cruel, like my abuser, my attacker. I don't get it. And I just didn't get the answers that I deserved and that I wanted in my life. But when I saw my boys and their relief, knowing that the bad man had been dead and was gone forever and would never haunt us again, that was the only relief I needed to move on with my life. And that is the story of Mary Vincent.
For fuck's sake, Carmen.
Hey, she didn't die.
She didn't die. She's such a trooper to be able to face him twice more. Because I feel... the way our justice system works, victims aren't victimized, or they don't go through the trauma just once. They have to go through the trauma when they're telling the police, the detectives, investigators what's going on. They have to do it when they're telling the district attorneys. They have to do it when they're saying it in court. They have to do it because people are putting your information all over newspapers, so everybody knows it. So you're living it over and over and over and over again. Which is incredibly fucked up. But the fact that she had the ovaries to go to his trial once again after he killed Roxanne. Wow, kudos to Mary. God damn it, Carmen. I don't even know what to say. I'm not a nail biter. And I was biting my nails because I didn't know if she was going to survive or not. And I don't know. Let me ask you this.
It's a great story.
Would you prefer knowing that your perpetrator was dead in prison or walking around the streets?
I have a lot of questions today, Laura.
I prefer
a lot
of questions. I do. I have a lot of philosophical, Carmen. Let's think about life and death and everything in between. But to me personally, I would prefer to know he was dead, because then I know for certain he could never harm me again, or anyone else for that matter. And I know that his eternal soul, because I believe in that, his eternal soul is going to be punished for what he, the crimes he committed. That's me. I would prefer him to be dead.
Some people like want to understand like about like what drove him. And this is why I always tell people, like, I don't care. But, you know, from a victim's point of view, that was what, like, the one thing she wanted to understand. What drove you to think that any of this was okay? And it sucks because she never got her answers, right? If anything, he was trying to manipulate the
idea. I don't think there's an answer for that.
There's not. But I mean,
you're just a bad person. You're a horrible person. That's mm-hmm. it. And I think we all, I do that a lot. I try to justify, oh, maybe it was their upbringing. Maybe they went through a past trauma, maybe blah, blah, blah. I try to justify it. But at the end of the day, when there's a person who's a perpetrator, an asshole, a dimwit, a dickhead, they're that way just because they decided to be that way. And trying to reason with their logic is going to hurt you more in the long run.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But cheers to Mary Vincent. Cheers to, what's her name? I forgot her name. What's her name?
Manuela Sainz.
Yeah. Bad bitches.
Very bad bitches, both of them.
Yep, absolutely. And, you know, I've been going on like a true crime rabbit hole, but I needed something to remind me that women are resilient, women are fighters, and your story and my story go hand in hand, right?
I agree. And I think I've been going on like a history binge too. You know, like, I love history. I appreciate history. And there's that degree of separation mm-hmm. that makes it easier for me to tell the stories mm-hmm. from an objective point of view, right?
Yeah.
And when they're so close, like the 1960s, 1970s, 1980s, 1990s, Roxanne, where was it, in 1990s or 2000? Yeah, 1990s. Mm-hmm. There's this degree of closeness that it's harder for me to like kind of detach. Again, it all works down to, we all have our own unresolved traumas. And I think that's one of mine. History is my forte. True crime is yours. And I think it goes back to the fact that I would never hitchhike, and you hitchhike near a prison.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, when I say it out loud, it sounds intense. Living it, you don't.
Would you let Elay do that? If Elay came to you and told you, I hitchhiked near this prison, what would your reaction be, Carmen?
Oh, man. I wouldn't give him a reason to hitchhike, though, right? Like, I'll make him feel safe. Like, okay, you didn't study for your math test. Instead of, like, putting him in that situation where he's going to fail and he's feeling anxious, why would I let him ditch? Stay home, bro. Study. We'll talk to your teacher tomorrow. Like, you didn't retain any of that. I think it just goes back onto how, like, we handle and the relationship that we have with our people. I didn't have that option growing up. It was do or die. You weren't ready for your test, dumb bitch.
This is why you're going to purgatory.
To the point I was telling you, like, I was more afraid of an ass whooping than I was to friggin' hitchhike.
And I can relate to that, because my parents were extremely strict. That's the thing about immigrant parents, right? They come to this country with their own customs, their own ideas, their own traditions, and they want us to succeed. And they feel that the only way we can succeed is by being close to perfect. And yeah, the minute we step out of line, they feel like their whole world is crashing down on them.
Well, they're projecting the opportunities that they wanted for themselves, and they want us to live up to that idea of perfectionism.
And we can't step out of line.
And we can't step out of line. And they've made so many sacrifices, right? So then it's that guilt that they instill in us. I clean houses for a living. I scrub toilets all my life. I'm working 15, 16 hours a day for you to have a better life. It's just like, don't. Don't. I'd rather, you know, like...
Let me ask you this. Do you ever talk to Elai about like your finances? Ever?
Like, no. No, I do tell him, like, we're broke. He never asks me for a damn thing ever. We can go to the store. We can go anywhere. He's not the type of kid that will be like, Mom, buy me this. He'll be like, Mom, how many chores do I have to do in order to buy this? Okay. But no. I think he just thinks I'm really poor. Which is okay by me.
Okay. On the other hand, my kids think I'm excessively rich and can buy them anything. Alberto asked me to buy him... everything to become a YouTuber, which included a computer, a video camera, a recorder.
Listen, why do kids, I mean, here we are making a dumb podcast, but like, why do kids like now see as being a YouTuber, like the equivalent of being an astronaut? Like,
because a lot of YouTubers have become famous. A lot of, it kind of goes, they're living in that generation, right? To us, YouTube was kind of like, you go, you create your videos, you put out your content, you find people who like the same thing and relate. To them, it's different, right? But one of the things I swore to myself I would never do was make my kids feel guilty, right? Like, sometimes I do, like, Alberto will be like, well, why aren't you playing with me? And I'm just like, well, dude, I have to work because you asked me for so many things. I have to pay for them. Like, how do you think I pay for all these things? Oh, you know, all these trips, all this stuff, all your toys. How do you think I pay for it? But that's as far as it goes. But I never guilt my kids into saying, like, I did all of this for you to have a better life, da 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 da, because I don't want my kids to feel like they owe me in any way, any shape, way, or form, because I grew up feeling like I owed my parents, to your point. I grew up like feeling like, you know, like my dad telling me his stories about like crossing the border and having to like, one of his stories that like has stuck to me the most is my dad came when he was about 18 or 19, crossed the border, went to Santa Fe, and he had to sleep in a trash can, like the metal trash cans outside of a restaurant. And him and his friends, it was two friends that they had to cross the border with, they had to eat the scraps that the restaurant would throw out. And eventually they became dishwashers and kind of grew up from there, right? And when you see my parents and the way they've climbed up, they are the American dream. They pull you up by your bootstraps. We did everything. We worked from dawn to sunset and da 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 da. And I'm just like, I don't ever want my kids to feel pressured that they have to live up to my idea of what perfectionism is, because I really fucked with my head.
Yeah. So keep your house a little bit dirty next time you think about that.
Carmen, stop it.
That's all I got to say about that.
Okay. Well, come visit me and I'll let you clean it. How about that?
I'm not going to clean your house. I barely clean mine. Pay somebody.
You know what? I'm going to pay somebody to clean my house.
All right, dude. Well, thank you guys for taking the time to listen to us. We hope you enjoyed the stories. Please follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and continue listening to our stories. We will continue doing this as long as you guys continue listening to it. So that's it for tonight. We'll see you next time. And remember, no es cafecito con tu abuela.
It's tequila shots with your best friend.
Good night.
Good night.